tinted glasses, and that no two shades are exactly alike. You and I are standing on the banks of a river. I am wearing green lenses, and you are wearing red. Wow, look how green the water is, I say. Green? Are you crazy? The water is red, you reply. Hello? Are you colorblind? That's as green gets. It's red, you idiot. Green, red. Many people look at conversations as a competition. It's my point of view versus yours. We can't both be right. In reality, since we're both coming from a different point of view, we both can be right. Furthermore, it's silly to try to win conversations. That usually ends up in win-lose or lose-lose and is a withdrawal from the RBA, the relationship bank account. My little sister was once told this story by a friend of hers named Toby. Notice what a difference standing in another's shoes made.
The worst part about going to school was having to ride the bus. I mean, most of my friends had a car to drive, even if it was a junkie, but we couldn't afford a car for my own personal use, so I had either take the bus or find a ride. Sometimes I would call my mom after school to come and pick me up, but she would take so long it drove me crazy. I remember many times screaming at my mom, "What took you forever? Don't you even care that I've been waiting for hours?" I never noticed how she felt or what she'd been doing. I only thought about myself. One day, I overheard my mom talking to my dad about it. She was crying and said how much she wished they could afford a car for me and how hard she had been working to try to earn the extra money. Suddenly, my whole perspective changed. I saw my mom as a real person with feelings, fear, hopes, doubts, and a great amount of love for me. I vowed never to treat her bad again. I even started talking more to her, and together we figured out a way I could get a part-time job and earn my way to a car. She even volunteered to drive me to work and back. I wish I had listened to her earlier.
Third, practice mirroring. Think like a mirror. What does a mirror do? It doesn't judge. It doesn't give advice. It reflects. Mirroring is simply this. Repeat back in your own words what the other person is saying and feeling. Mirroring isn't mimicking. Mimicking is when you repeat exactly what the other person says, like a parrot. Geez, Tom, I'm having the worst time in school right now. You're having the worst time in school right now. I'm practically flunking all of my classes. You're practically flunking all of your classes. Man, stop saying everything I'm saying. What is it with you? Mirroring is different from mimicking in the following ways. Mimicking is repeating words. Mirroring is repeating meaning. Mimicking is using the same words, while mirroring is using your own words. And finally, mimicking is cold and indifferent, while mirroring is warm and caring. Let's take a look at an everyday conversation to see how mirroring works. Your dad might say to you, "No, you can't take the car tonight, son, and that's final." A typical seek first to talk response might be, "Dad, you never let me take the car. I always have to get a ride, and I'm sick of it." This kind of response usually ends up in a big yelling match where neither side feels very good afterward. Instead, try mirroring. Repeat back in your own words what the other person is saying and feeling. Let's try it again. "No, you can't take the car tonight, son, and that's final." I can see that you're kind of upset about this, Dad. "You bet I'm upset. The way your grades have been dropping lately, you don't deserve the car." "You're worried about my grades?" "I am. You know how badly I want you to get into college." "College is really important to you, isn't it, Dad?" "You know, I never had the chance to go to college, son, and I've never been able to make much because of it. Now, I know money's not everything, but it sure would help right now. I just want a better life for you." "I see. You're so capable that it just drives me crazy when you don't take school seriously. You know, I guess you can take the car if you promise me that you'll do your homework later tonight. That's all I'm asking. Promise?" Now, did you notice what happened? By practicing the skill of mirroring, the boy was able to uncover the real issue. Dad didn't care so much about him taking the car. He was more worried about his future and his casualness toward school. Once he felt that his son understood how important grades in college were to him, he dropped his defenses. I can't guarantee that mirroring will always lead to such perfect outcomes. It's usually, but not always, more complicated than this. Dad might have replied, "Well, I'm glad you understand where I'm coming from, son. Now go to your homework." But I can guarantee you that mirroring will be a deposit into another's relationship bank account. It'll get further than you'd get using the fight or flight approach. If you're still a skeptic, I challenge you to give it a try. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Disclaimer. If you practice mirroring but don't really desire to understand others, they will see through it and feel manipulated. Mirroring is a skill, the tip of the iceberg. Your attitude or desire to really understand another is the lurking mass of ice underneath the surface. If your attitude is right, but you don't have the skill, you'll be okay. But it doesn't work the other way around. If you have both the attitude and the skill, you'll become a powerful communicator. Here are a few mirroring phrases you can use when trying to practice genuine listening. Remember, your goal is to repeat back, in your own words, what another person is saying and feeling. Here are some phrases. As I get it, you feel that. So, as I see it, I can see that you're feeling. You feel that. So what you're saying is, important note, there's a time and a place for genuine listening. You'll want to do it when you're talking about an important or sensitive issue, like if a friend really needs help or if you're having a communication problem with a loved one. These conversations take time. You can't rush them. However, you don't need to do it during casual conversations or everyday small talk. Man, where's the bathroom? I gotta go real bad. So what you're saying is you're worried you won't find a bathroom in time. That's not gonna work. Genuine listening in action. Let's take another look at the sister who needs a listening ear from her big brother to illustrate how different genuine listening is. Sister says, I don't like our new school at all. Ever since we moved, I've felt like the biggest outcast. I wish I could find some new friends. Now, the brother could say any one of the following responses. Pass the Cheetos. That's called spacing out listening. Sounds great. Pretend listening. Speaking of friends, my friend Bart, that's selective listening. Or he could say, what you need to do is start meeting new people, sis. That's advising. Or, you're not trying hard enough. That's judging. And finally, are you having trouble with your grades? That's called probing. See, if Big Brother is smart, he'll try mirroring. Here's what he'd say. You feel that school's kind of tough right now, do you? It's the worst. I mean, I don't have any friends, and that Tabitha Jones has been so rude to me. I just don't know what to do. You kind of feel confused? That's mirroring again. Sure do. I've always been popular, and then suddenly, no one even knows my name. I've been trying to get to know new people, but it doesn't seem to be working. I kind of see you're frustrated, sister. Yeah, I probably sound like I'm psycho or something. Anyway, thanks for listening. No problem. What do you think I should do? You see what happened? By listening, Big Brother made a huge deposit into his sister's relationship bank account. In addition, little sister is now open to his advice. The time is now right for him to seek to be understood, to share his point of view. A guy named Andy shared this.
I was going through communication problems with my girlfriend, whom I cared very much about. We'd been going out for a year, and we began to fight and argue a lot. And I was really scared to maybe lose her. When I learnt about seeking first to understand, then to be understood, and how to apply the relationship bank account to relationships, I took it very personal. I realized that I had always been trying to interpret what she was saying, but never really listened with an open mind. It saved our relationship, and we are still together, 2 years later. Our relationship is much more mature than most couples because we both believe in Habit 5. We use it for big decisions as well as little ones, like going out for dinner. Every time I am together with her, I honestly keep saying to myself, now shut up and try to understand her.
Communicating with parents. Communication is hard enough by itself, but throw mom and dad into the mix and then you've got a tiger by the tail. I got along pretty well with my parents as a teenager, but there were periods when I was convinced that they had aliens living inside their bodies. I felt they didn't understand me or respect me as an individual, but just lumped me in with all the rest of the kids. But no matter how distant your parents may seem at times, life will go so much better if you learn to communicate with them. If you want to improve your relationship with mom or dad, and shock the heck out of them in the process, try listening to them, just as you would a friend. Now, it may seem kind of weird to treat your parents as if they were normal people and all, but it's worth trying. We're always saying to our parents, you don't understand me. No one understands me. But have you ever stopped to consider that perhaps you don't understand them? You see, they have pressures too. While you're worrying about your friends and your upcoming history exam, They're worrying about their bosses and how they're going to pay for your braces. Like you, they have days when they get offended at work and go into the restroom to cry. They have days when they don't know how they're going to pay for the bills. Your mom may seldom get a chance to go out on her own, let down and enjoy herself. Your dad may get laughed at by the neighbors because of the car he drives. They may have unfulfilled dreams they've had to sacrifice so that you can reach yours. Hey, you know, parents are people too. They laugh, they cry, they get their feelings hurt, and they don't always have their act together, just like me and you. If you take the time to understand and listen to your parents, two incredible things will happen. First, you'll gain a greater respect for them. I remember when I turned 19, I was reading one of my dad's books for the very first time, and he was a very successful author, and everyone had always told me how great his books were. But I had never taken the time to even look at one of them until then. Wow, I thought, after finishing that first book, my dad's quite smart. And for all those years, I was convinced I was smarter. Second, if you take time to understand and listen to your parents, you'll get your way so much more often. This isn't manipulation. It's a principle. If they feel that you understand them, they'll be much more willing to listen to you. They'll be more flexible, and they'll trust you more. One mother once told me, if my teenage daughters simply took time to understand my hectic world and did little things around the house to help me, why, I would give them so many privileges they wouldn't know what to do with them. So how can you better understand your parents? Well, you can start by asking them some questions. When is the last time you asked your mom or your dad, Mom, Dad, how was your day today? Or, tell me what you like or don't like about your job. Or, is there anything I could do to help around the house? You can also begin to make small deposits into their relationship bank account. To do that, ask yourself, what do my parents consider a deposit? Jump into their shoes and think about it from their point of view, not your own. A deposit to them might mean doing the dishes or garbage without being asked, or keeping a commitment to be home on time, or, if you're living away from home, calling them every weekend. Then seek to be understood. I saw the results of a survey in which people were asked what their greatest fears were. Death came out as number two, if you can believe it. You'll never guess what the number one fear was. It was speaking in public. People would rather die than speak in public. Isn't that interesting? It takes boldness to speak up in public, that's for sure. But it also takes boldness to speak up in general. The second half of Habit 5, then seek to be understood, is as important as the first half, but requires something different of us. Seeking first to understand requires consideration, but seeking to be understood requires courage. Practicing only the first half of Habit 5, seek first to understand, is weak. It's lose-win. It's the doormat syndrome. Yet, it's an easy trap to fall into, especially with parents. I'm not going to tell Mom how I feel. She won't listen, and she'd never understand. So, instead, we harbor these feelings inside while our parents carry on never knowing how we truly feel. But this isn't healthy. Remember, unexpressed feelings never die. They are buried alive and come forth later in uglier ways. You've got to share your feelings or they'll eat your heart out. Besides, if you have taken the time to listen, your chances of being listened to are very good. In the following story, notice how Kelly practiced both halves of the habit.
I was sick and missed a day of school. My parents were concerned that I wasn't getting enough sleep and that I was staying out too late. Instead of coming up with a bunch of excuses, I tried to understand their reasoning, and I agreed with them. But I also explained to them that I'm trying to have a fun senior year, and this includes spending time with my friends. My parents were willing to look at the situation from my point of view, and we reached a compromise. I was to stay in one of the days that weekend and rest. I don't think my parents would have been as lenient if I hadn't tried to understand them first.
Giving feedback is an important part of seeking to be understood. If done in the right way, it can be a deposit into the RBA. If someone's fly is open, for instance, give feedback. They'll be very grateful, believe me. If you have a close friend who has bad breath, to the point of developing a reputation for it, don't you think he or she would appreciate some honest feedback, delivered tenderly? Have you ever returned home from a date only to discover that you had a big piece of meat between your teeth the whole evening? With terror, you immediately recall every smile you made that night. Don't you wish your date had told you? If your RBA with someone is high, you can give feedback openly without hesitation. My younger brother Joshua, a senior in high school, shared this.
One nice thing about having older brothers or sisters is the feedback they give you. When I come home from a high school basketball or football game, Mom and Dad will meet me at the door and go over all the key plays I made. Mom will rave about the talent that I have, and Dad will say it was my leadership skills that directed the team to victory. When my sister Jenny comes in the kitchen to join us, I'll ask her how I did. She'll tell me how ordinary I played, and I'd better get my act together if I want to keep my starting position. And she hopes I'll play better the next game and not embarrass her.
Since Jenny and Josh are very close, they could share feedback candidly. Keep these two points in mind as you give feedback. First, ask yourself the question, will this feedback really help this person, or am I doing it just to suit myself and fix them? If your motive for the feedback isn't with their best interest at heart, then it's probably not the time or place to do it. Second, send I messages instead of you messages. In other words, give feedback in the first person. Say things like, I am concerned that you have a temper problem, or I feel that you've been acting selfish lately. You messages are more threatening because they sound as if you're labeling them. You are so self-centered. Or, you have a terrible temper. Well, that should pretty much wrap it up. I don't have a lot more to say about this habit except to end with the thought that we began with. You have two ears, and you have one mouth. Use them accordingly. Coming attractions. Next up, find out how 1 + 1 can sometimes equal 3. I'll see you there.
Baby steps, number 1. See how long you can keep eye contact with someone while they are talking to you.
2. Go to the mall, find a seat, and watch people communicate with each other. Observe what their body language is saying.
Number 3. In your interactions today, try mirroring one person and mimicking another just for fun. Compare the results.
4. Ask yourself, which of the 5 poor listening styles do I have the biggest problem with? Spacing out, pretend listening, selective listening, word listening, or self-centered listening? Judging, advising, probing. Now, try to go one day without doing it.
Number 5. Sometime this week, ask your mom or dad, how's it going? Open up your heart and practice genuine listening. You'll be surprised by what you learn.
Number 6. If you're a talker, take a break and spend your day listening. Only talk when you have to.
7. The next time you find yourself wanting to bury your feelings deep inside you, don't do it. Instead, express them in a responsible way.
Baby steps number 8. Think of a situation where your constructive feedback would really help another person. Share it with them when the time is right.
Habit 6. Synergize the highway. Have you ever seen a flock of geese heading south for the winter, flying along in a V formation? Scientists have learned some amazing things about why they fly that way. By flying in formation, the whole flock can fly 71% farther than if each bird flew alone. When a goose flaps its wings, it creates an updraft for the goose that follows. As the lead goose gets tired, he will rotate to the back of the V and allow another goose to take the lead position. The geese in the back honk to encourage those in the front. Whenever a goose falls out of formation, it immediately feels the resistance of trying to fly alone and quickly gets back into formation. Finally, when one of the geese gets sick or is wounded and falls out of formation, two geese will follow it down to help and protect it. They will stay with the injured goose until it is better or dies and then will join a new formation or create their own to catch up with the group. Smart birds, those geese. By sharing in each other's draft, taking turns in the lead position, honking encouragement to each other, staying in formation, and watching out for the wounded, they accomplish so much more than if each bird flew solo. It makes me wonder if they took a class on Habit 6, Synergize. What does synergize mean? In a nutshell, synergy is achieved when two or more people work together to create a better solution than either could alone. It's not your way or my way, but a better way, a higher way. Synergy is the reward, the delicious fruit you'll taste as you get better at living the other habits, especially at thinking win-win and seeking first to understand. Learning to synergize is like learning to form V formations with others instead of trying to fly solo through life. You'll be amazed at how much faster and farther you'll go. To better understand what synergy is, let's see what synergy is not. Synergy is celebrating differences. It's not tolerating differences. Synergy is teamwork. It's not working independently. Synergy is open-mindedness. The opposite, thinking you're always right. Synergy is finding new and better ways. And synergy is not a compromise. Synergy is everywhere in nature. The great sequoia trees, which grow to heights of 300 feet or more, grow in clumps and share a vast array of intermingled roots. Without each other, they would blow over in a storm. Many plants and animals live together in a symbiotic relationship. If you have ever seen a picture of a small bird feeding off the back of a rhino, you've seen synergy. Each benefits. The bird gets fed, and the rhino gets cleaned. Synergy isn't anything new. If you've ever been on a team of any kind, you've felt it. If you've ever worked on a group project that really came together, or been on a really fun group date, you've felt it too. A good band is a great example of synergy. It's not just the drums, or the guitar, or the sax, or the vocalist. It's all of them together that make up the sound. Each band member brings his or her strengths to the table to create something better than each could alone. No instrument is more important than another, just different. Celebrating differences. Synergy doesn't just happen. It's a process. You have to get there. And the foundation of getting there is this. Learn to celebrate differences. I'll never forget encountering in high school a Tongan named Feeney Onga. At first, I was scared to death of him. I mean, the guy was built like a tank, was mean-looking, and was known as a street fighter. We looked, dressed, talked, thought, and ate differently. You should have seen this guy eat. The only thing we had in common was football. So, how in the world did we become best friends? Maybe it was because we were so different. I never quite knew what Feeney was thinking or what he would do next, and that was terribly refreshing. I especially enjoyed being his friend when a fight broke out. He had strengths I didn't have, and I had strengths he didn't have, so together we made a great team. Boy, am I glad that the world isn't full of a bunch of clones who act and think exactly like me. Thank goodness for diversity. When we hear the word diversity, we typically think of racial and gender differences, but there is so much more to it, including differences in physical features, dress, language, wealth, family, religious beliefs, lifestyle, education, interests, skills, age, style, and on and on. As Dr. Seuss said in One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, "We see them come, we see them go. Some are fast and some are slow. Some are high and some are low. Not one of them is like another. Don't ask us why, go ask your mother." The world is fast becoming a great melting pot of cultures, races, religions, and ideas. Since this diversity around you is ever increasing, you've got an important decision to make regarding how you're going to handle it. There are three possible approaches you can take. Level 1, shun diversity. Level 2, tolerate diversity. And level 3, celebrate diversity. Shunner's profile. Shunners are afraid, sometimes even scared to death, of differences. It disturbs them that someone may have different skin color, worship a different god, or wear a different brand of jeans than they do, because they're convinced their way of life is the best, the right, or the only way. They enjoy ridiculing those who are different, all the while believing that they are saving the world from some terrible pestilence. They won't hesitate to get physical about it if they have to, and they will often join gangs or cliques or anti-groups because their strength in numbers. Tolerator's profile. Tolerators believe that everyone has the right to be different. They don't shun diversity, but they don't embrace it either. Their motto is, "You keep to yourself, and I'll keep to myself. You do your thing, let me do mine. You don't bother me, and I won't bother you." Although they come close, they never get to synergy because they see differences as hurdles, not as potential strengths to build upon. They don't know what they're missing. Celebrator's profile. Celebrators value differences. They see them as an advantage, not a weakness. They've learned that two people who think differently can achieve more than two people who think alike. They realize that celebrating differences doesn't mean that you necessarily agree with those differences, such as being a liberal or a conservative, only that you value them. In their eyes, diversity equals creative sparks, which equals opportunity. So, where do you fall on the spectrum? Take a hard look, seriously. If someone's clothes don't match yours, do you value their unique clothing styles, or do you think they're out of touch? Think about a group that has contrary religious beliefs to yours. Do you respect their beliefs, or do you write them off as a bunch of weirdos? If someone lives on a different side of town than you do, do you feel that they could teach you a thing or two, or do you label them because of where they live? The truth is, celebrating diversity is a struggle for most of us, depending on the issue. For example, you may appreciate racial and cultural diversity, and in the same breath look down on someone because of the clothes they wear. It's much easier to appreciate differences when we realize that in one way or another, we are all a minority of one. And we should remember that diversity isn't just an external thing, it's also internal. In the book, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten, Robert Fulghum says, "We are as different from one another on the inside of our heads as we appear to be different from one another on the outside of our heads." How do we differ on the inside? Well, we learn differently. As you've probably noticed, your friend's or sister's brain doesn't work the same way yours does. Dr. Thomas Armstrong has identified 7 kinds of smarts and says that kids may learn best through their most dominant intelligence. Linguistic. These kind of people learn through reading, writing, telling stories. Logical, mathematical. They learn through logic, patterns, categories, and relationships. Then there's bodily, kinesthetic. They learn through bodily sensations, touching. Spatial. These people learn through images and pictures. Musical. Learning through sound and rhythm. Interpersonal. Learn through interaction and communication with others. And finally, intrapersonal. They learn through their own feelings. Now, one type of intelligence isn't better than another, only different. You may be logical, mathematical, dominant, and your sister may be interpersonal dominant. Depending on your approach to diversity, you might say she's weird because she's so talkative, or you could take advantage of those differences and get her to help you in your speech class. We see differently. Everyone sees the world differently and has a different paradigm about themselves, about others, and about life in general. Celebrate your own diversity. Our tendency is always to ask, "What fruit's best?" The answer is, that's a dumb question. I have 3 brothers. Although we have much in common, like our nose sizes and parents, we are very different. When I was young, I was always trying to prove to myself that somehow my talents were better than theirs. I would say things like this in my head, "Sure, you may be more outgoing than me, but who cares? I'm better at school than you, and that's more important." I've since seen the stupidity of that kind of thinking, and am learning to appreciate the fact that they have their strengths, and I have mine. No one's better or worse, only different. That's why you shouldn't feel so bad if a member of the opposite sex, whom you are just dying to go out with, doesn't go for you. You may be the most luscious and mouth-watering grape around, but he or she may be looking for a banana. And no matter how much you want to change a fruit, you're a grape, and they want a banana. But don't worry, a grape seeker is bound to drop by sometime. Instead of trying to blend in and be like everyone else, be proud of and celebrate your unique differences and qualities. A fruit salad is delicious precisely because each fruit maintains its own flavor. Roadblocks to celebrating differences. Although there are many, 3 of the largest roadblocks to synergy are ignorance, cliques, and prejudice. Let's talk about each one. Ignorance. Ignorance means you're clueless. You don't know what other people believe, how they feel, or what they've been through. Ignorance often abounds when it comes to understanding people with disabilities. As Crystal Lee Helms explained in an article submitted to Mirror, a Seattle area newspaper. Here's what she said.
"My name is Crystal. I'm 5'1", with blonde hair and hazel eyes. Big deal, right? What if I told you I was deaf? In a perfect world, it wouldn't and shouldn't matter. We don't live in a perfect world, though, and it does matter. The moment someone knows I'm deaf, their whole attitude changes. Suddenly, they look at me differently. You'd be surprised how people act. The most common question I get is, 'How did you become deaf?' When I tell them, their reaction is as common as the question itself. 'Oh, I'm so sorry. That's so sad.' Whenever that happens, I simply look at them in the eye and I calmly inform them, 'No, really, it's not sad at all. Don't apologize.' No matter how good the intentions are, pity always makes my stomach churn. Not all attitudes put me on the defensive. Some are just plain funny. I was signing with my friends, and some dude I didn't know came up to me and started talking. 'What is it like being deaf?' 'I don't know. What is it like being hearing? I mean, it isn't like anything. It just is.' You see, the thing is, if you meet someone who is deaf, don't write them off as disabled or disadvantaged. Instead, take the time to get to know them and find out what being deaf is all about. By doing this, you open yourself to understanding, not only to others, but more importantly, to yourself."
Clicks. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be with those you're comfortable with. It becomes a problem only when your group of friends becomes so exclusive that they begin to reject everyone who isn't just like them. It's kind of hard to value differences in a close-knit clique. Those on the outside feel like second-class citizens, and those on the inside often suffer from superiority complexes. But breaking into a clique isn't hard. All you have to do is lose your identity, be assimilated, and become part of the Borg collective. Prejudice. Have you ever felt stereotyped, labeled, or prejudged by someone because your skin's the wrong color, your accent's too heavy, or you live on the wrong side of the tracks? Haven't we all? And isn't it a sick feeling? Although we are all created equally, unfortunately, we are not all treated equally. It's a sad fact that minorities of all types often have additional hurdles to leap in life because of prejudices held by so many. Racism is one of the world's oldest problems. We aren't born with prejudices. They're learned. Kids, for instance, are colorblind. But as they mature, they begin to pick up on the prejudices of others and form walls, as is explained in Rodgers and Hammerstein's lyrics to a song from the musical South Pacific. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made, and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. The following poem, by an unknown source, tells the sad tale of what happens when people prejudge one another. The Cold Within. 6 humans trapped by happenstance in bleak and bitter cold. Each one possessed a stick of wood, or so the story is told. Their dying fire, in need of logs, the first man held his back. For of the faces round the fire, he noticed one was black. The next man, looking across the way, saw one not of his church, and couldn't bring himself to give the fire his stick of birch. The third one sat in tattered clothes, he gave his coat a hitch. Why should his log be put to use to warm the idle rich? The rich man just sat back and thought of the wealth he had in store, and how to keep what he had earned from the lazy, shiftless poor. The black man's face bespoke revenge as the fire passed from sight, for all he saw in the stick of wood was a chance to spite the white. The last man of this forlorn group did not accept for gain. Giving only to those who gave was how he played the game. Their logs held tight, in death's still hand, was proof of human sin. They didn't die from the cold without, they died from the cold within. Sticking up for diversity. Fortunately, the world is full of people who are warm within and who value diversity. The following story by Bill Sanders is a wonderful example of sticking up for diversity and showing courage.
A couple years ago, I witnessed courage that run chills up and down my spine. At a high school assembly, I'd spoken about picking on people and how each of us has the ability to stand up for people instead of putting them down. Afterwards, we had a time when anyone could come up to the bleachers and speak into the microphone. Students could say thank you to someone who would help them. And some people came and did just that. A girl thanked some of the friends who had helped her through family troubles. A boy spoke of some people who had supported him during an emotional, difficult time. Then a senior girl stood up. She stepped over to the microphone. She pointed to the sophomore section and challenged her whole school. Let's stop picking on that boy. Sure, he's different from us, but we're in this thing together. On the inside, he's no different from us and needs our acceptance, love, compassion, and approval. He needs a friend. Why do we continually brutalize and put him down? I'm challenging this entire school to lighten up and give him a chance. All the time she shared, I had my back to the section where that boy sat, and I had no idea who he was. Obviously, the school knew. I felt almost afraid to look at that section, thinking the boy must be red in the face, wanting to crawl under his seat and hide from the world. But as I glanced back, I saw a boy smiling from ear to ear. His whole body bounced up and down. He raised one fist in the air. His body language said, "Thank you. Thank you. Keep telling them. You saved my life today."
Finding the highway. Once you've bought into the idea that differences are a strength and not a weakness, and once you're committed to at least trying to celebrate differences, you're ready to find the highway. The Buddhist definition of the middle way does not mean compromise. It means higher, like the apex of a triangle. Synergy is more than just compromise or cooperation. Compromise is 1 + 1 = 1.5. Cooperation is 1 + 1 = 2. Synergy is 1 + 1 = 3, or 10, or 20, or 100. It's creative cooperation, with an emphasis on the word creative. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Builders know all about it. If one 2x4 beam can support 607 pounds, then two 2x4s should be able to support 1,214 pounds, right? Actually, two 2x4s can support 1,821 pounds. Now, if you nail them together, two 2x4s can now support 4,878 pounds, and three 2x4s nailed together can support 8,481 pounds. Musicians know how it works too. They know that when a C and a G note are perfectly in tune, it produces a third note, or an E. Finding the highway always produces more, as Laney discovered.
In my physics lab, the teacher was demonstrating the principle of momentum, and our assignment was to construct a catapult, like in medieval times. We called it a pumpkin launcher. There were three of us in our group, two boys and me. We were all quite different, so we came up with a lot of different ideas. One of us wanted to use bungee cords to make the launcher flip. Someone else wanted to use tension and ropes. We tried each without much success, and then we figured out a way to use both of them together. It gave a lot more spring than either would have done alone. It was cool because it doubled the length of our shot.
Synergy occurred as the founders of the United States were forming their government structure. William Paterson proposed the New Jersey Plan, which said that states should get equal representation in government regardless of population size. This plan favored the smaller states. James Madison had a different idea, known as the Virginia Plan, which argued that states with greater population should have greater representation. This plan favored the larger states. After several weeks of debate, they reached a decision that all parties felt good about. They agreed to have two branches of Congress. In one branch, the Senate, each state would get two representatives, regardless of population size. In the other branch, the House of Representatives, each state would get representatives based on population. Although it is called the Great Compromise, this famous decision could really be called the Great Synergy, because it has proved to be better than either of the original proposals. Getting to synergy. Whether you're arguing with your parents over dating and curfew guidelines or planning a school activity with your peers, or simply not seeing eye to eye, there is a way to get to synergy. Here's a simple 5-step process to help you get there. I call it the Getting to Synergy Action Plan. Step 1. Define the problem or opportunity. 2. Their way. Seek first to understand the ideas of others. 3. My way. Seek to be understood by sharing your ideas. 4th. Brainstorm. This is where you create new options and ideas. 5. Highway. Now, find the best solution. Let's give the action plan a try on a problem to see how it works. I call this the vacation. Here's Dad. I don't care how you feel. You're going on this vacation whether you like it or not. Understand? We've had this plan for months, and it's important that we spend some time together as a family. Here's you. But I don't want to go. I want to be with my friends. I'll miss out on everything. Here's Mom. I don't want you staying here by yourself, honey. I'd worry the whole time, and it would ruin my vacation. We want you with us. So, let's try our Getting to Synergy action plan. First, define the problem or opportunity. In this case, we have a problem. It's this. My parents want me to go on vacation with the family, but I would rather stay home and go out and hang out with my friends. Next, their way. Here's where you seek first to understand the ideas of others. Try using the listening skills you learned in Habit 5 so that you can really understand your mom and dad. Remember, if you want to have power and influence with your parents, they need to feel understood first. By listening, you learn the following. This vacation is very important to my dad. He wants to have a family bonding time. He feels it won't be the same without me. Mom feels that they would worry so much about me being home alone that they wouldn't enjoy the vacation. Okay, now it's time to share your point of view, my way. Seek to be understood by sharing your ideas. Practice the second half of Habit 5 and have the courage to share your feelings. If you've taken the time to listen to them, they'll be much more likely to listen to you. So, you tell your parents how you feel. Mom and Dad, I want to stay home and be with my friends. They're very important to me. We have a lot of things planned, and I don't want to miss out on any of the fun. Besides, I just go crazy when I have to drive in a crowded car all day with my little brother and sister. Next step, brainstorm. Create new options and ideas. This is where the magic happens. Utilize your imagination and create new ideas together that you could never think of alone. As you brainstorm, keep these tips in mind. Get creative. Throw out your wildest ideas. Let it all flow. Avoid criticism. Nothing kills the flow of creativity like being critical. Next, piggyback. Keep building upon the best ideas. One great idea leads to another, which leads to another. Brainstorming produces the following ideas. Dad said we could go to a vacation spot that I would enjoy more. I mentioned that I could stay with relatives close by. Mom suggested I could take a friend with me. I mentioned using my savings and busing out to meet them later, so I wouldn't have to drive in a crowded car. Mom was willing to cut the vacation short, so it would be easier for me. I suggested staying home for part of the vacation and then joining them later. Dad was willing to let me stay home if I would paint the fence while they were gone. Now, the step is highway. It's time to find the best solution. After brainstorming for a while, the best idea will usually surface. Now it's just a matter of going with it. In the end, here's the solution. We all agreed that I could stay home during the first half of the week and then bus out with a friend to join the family for the second half. They even offered to pay the bus fare for me and my friend if I would paint the fence. It's not hard work, so I will still have time to hang out with my friends. They're happy, and so am I. If you follow the basics of the above formula, you'll be amazed at what can happen. But it takes a lot of maturity to get to synergy. You have to be willing to listen to the other point of view. You then need to have the courage to express your point of view. Finally, you've got to let your creative juices flow. See how this 11th grader got to synergy.
Prom was coming up, and I wanted to wear a certain style dress that I had found in a fashion magazine. The only problem was that it was too short on me because I'm real tall. I knew my mother would flip. We sat down that evening and discussed the prom and who was going to take me out. I showed her the dress in a magazine, and, as I had anticipated, she said, "Absolutely not, it's way too short." I let her voice her opinion about what she thought I ought to do and where I should shop. I didn't like anything she had to say, but it was obvious that she felt very strong about it. Then we started brain-dumping ideas of what I could do, and one of the ideas was to find a seamstress and see if she could sew something that would satisfy us both. I made a quick phone call to a friend, found a seamstress, and soon we were drawing up our ideas and shopping for fabric and pattern. The outcome was beautiful, very professional, and different from everyone else's dress. I didn't spend as much money as I normally would have, and my friends loved that outfit too.
Go for it. The Getting to Synergy Action Plan can be used in all kinds of situations. You've just been assigned a group project for biology with three people you don't even know. That's when you could use it. Or you and your boyfriend can't decide whose family you should spend Thanksgiving with. Another one, you want to go to college, but your parents aren't willing to help you pay for it. Still another, as a student body officer, you and your team are in charge of planning the biggest dance of the year. Or you and your mom or your stepmom disagree on your curfew. And finally, you're always fighting with your brother about the computer. The Getting to Synergy Action Plan is a guideline, nothing more. The steps don't always have to be in order, and you don't always have to do all of them. If your relationship bank account is extremely high with someone, you can virtually skip the first three steps and jump right into brainstorming. On the other hand, if your RBA is low, you may need to take more time for listening. It may take several conversations to solve some problems, so be patient. Despite Herculean efforts on your part to find the highway, sometimes the other party won't make any effort at all. You may just have to keep building the RBA in these situations. How do you normally solve conflicts? Most of the time, it's usually fight with words or fists, or flight. You're silent or you take off. The Getting to Synergy Action Plan offers an alternative. Pretend you and your sister are in one continuous fight over who gets the car. Each of you feels you need it more than the other person and has created a real bad feeling between you. Having recently learned about synergy, you decide to give the Getting to Synergy Action Plan a try. And here you go. Define the problem or opportunity. First step. Sis, I'm tired of fighting over the car all the time. Let's talk and see if we can come up with a win-win. Oh, come on. Don't try that Seven Habits crap on me. I mean it. I really wanted to work this out. Fine. How do you suggest we do it? There's only one car and there's two of us. The next step is their way. Try to understand the ideas of others. Well, to start with, tell me why you need the car all the time. You know why. I need a way to get home after practice. Why can't you get a ride with your friends? I can sometimes, but it always makes me feel embarrassed because I'm so far out of their way. I see. Are there other reasons why you need the car? Yeah, I mean, sometimes I like to stop by Jared's house on the way home. That's important to you? You bet. So, if I understand you correctly, you don't like scrounging rides home after practice, and you want the freedom a car gives you to do things like see Jared. Does that pretty much sum it up? Yeah. My way. Okay, you've heard her way. Now, seek to be understood by sharing your ideas. Would you mind if I told you why I need the car? I think I already know, but go ahead. It's just work. I mean, I have to be at work by 6 o'clock every night, and you usually don't get home until about 6:30. When I have Mom take me, I'm always late, and my boss has a fit. Yeah, I know how it is with Mom. Next, brainstorm. Create new options and ideas. Sis, how about it if you were to get out of practice a little earlier? If you got home by 5:45, then you could have the car first, and then I'd take it to work. I would, but I can't get out of practice early. What if you were to start work a little later? Is that possible? You know, now that I think about it, that might work. I'm sure my boss would let me start later if I ended later. Why don't we give it a try? You get the car till after practice, and then I'll take it to work later. But what if I want to see Jared? If you want to see Jared, I'd just drop you off on my way to work and pick you up on the way home. How would that be? Yeah, that'd be fine. Now you can move to the highway. You find and define the best solution. So, sis, do we have a deal? We have a deal. Now, it's not always this easy, but on the other hand, sometimes it is. Teamwork and synergy. Great teams are usually made up of 5 or more different types of people, with each member playing a different but important role. There are plotters. Sure and steady, they stick to a job until it's done. And there are followers. They are very supportive of leaders. If they hear a great idea, they can run with it. We also have innovators. They're creative. They're idea people. They offer the sparks. And then we have harmonizers. They provide unity and support and are great synergizers as they work with others and encourage cooperation. Finally, of course, every group has its show-offs. They're fun to work with, but they can be tough at times. They often add the spice and momentum needed to bring the team overall success. Great teamwork is like a great piece of music. All the voices and instruments may be singing and playing at once, but they aren't competing. Individually, the instruments and voices make different sounds, play different notes, pause at different times, yet they blend together to create a whole new sound. This is synergy. The book that you are listening to is dripping with synergy. When I first decided to write it, I felt overwhelmed. So I started in the only way I knew how. I got help. I immediately asked a friend for assistance. I soon put together a bigger team. I identified a few schools and educators from around the country who agreed to give me feedback on drafts at different stages. And I began interviewing teens one-on-one and in groups. I then hired an artist. I put together contests asking for stories dealing with teens and the 7 Habits. By the end, there were well over 100 people involved in the creation of this book. Slowly but surely, it all came together. Each person brought his or her talents to the table and contributed in a different way. While I focused on writing, others focused on what they were good at. One was good at collecting stories. One could find great quotes, and another knew how to edit. Some were plotters, some were innovators, some were show-offs. It was teamwork and synergy to the max. The wonderful byproduct of teamwork and synergy is that it builds relationships. Basketball Olympian Deborah Miller-Palmer said it well. Even when you've played the game of your life, it's the feeling of teamwork that you'll remember. You'll forget the plays, the shots, and the scores, but you'll never forget your teammates. Coming attractions. If you keep listening, you'll discover the real reason why Angelina Jolie looks like a million bucks. Just a little bit longer and you're done.
Baby steps. Number 1. When you meet a classmate or neighbor with a disability or impairment, don't feel sorry for them or avoid them because you don't know what to say. Instead, go out of your way to get acquainted.
2. The next time you are having a disagreement with a parent, try out the Getting to Synergy Action Plan. 1. Define the problem. 2. Listen to them. 3. Share your views. 4. Brainstorm. And 5. Find the best solution.
Number 3. Share a personal problem with an adult you trust. See if the exchanging of viewpoints leads to new insights and ideas about your problem.
4. This week, look around and notice how much synergy is going on all around you, such as 2 hands working together, teamwork, symbiotic relationships in nature, and creative problem solving.
5.
Think about someone who irritates you. What is different about them?
Number 6. Brainstorm with your friends and come up with something fun, new, and different to do this weekend, instead of doing the same old thing again and again.
Number 7. Rate your openness to diversity in each of the following categories. Are you a shunner, tolerator, or celebrator? Race, gender, religion, age, dress. What can you do to become a celebrator in each category?
Habit 7, sharpen the saw. It's me time. Do you ever feel imbalanced, stressed out, or empty inside? If so, you're going to love Habit 7 because it was especially designed to help you deal with these problems. Why do we call it sharpen the saw? Well, imagine that you're going for a walk in the forest when you come upon a guy furiously sawing down a tree. What are you doing, you ask? I'm sawing down a tree, comes the curt reply. How long have you been at it? 4 hours so far, but I'm really making progress, he says, sweat dripping from his chin. Your saw looks really dull, you know, you say. Why don't you take a break and sharpen it? I can't, you idiot. I'm too busy sawing. Well, we all know who the real idiot here is now, don't we? If the guy were to take a 15-minute break to sharpen the saw, he'd probably finish 3 times faster. Have you ever been too busy driving to take time to get gas? Have you ever been too busy living to take time to renew yourself? Habit 7 is all about keeping your personal self sharp so that you can better deal with life. It means regularly renewing and strengthening the 4 key dimensions of your life: your body, your brain, your heart, and your soul. Your body is the physical dimension, things like exercise, eating healthy, sleeping well, relaxing. Your brain is the mental dimension, reading, educating yourself, writing, learning new skills. Your heart is the emotional dimension, building relationships. This is the relationship bank account and the personal bank account, giving service, laughing. Your soul is the spiritual dimension, things such as meditating, keeping a journal, praying, or taking in quality media. Balance is better. The ancient Greeks' famous saying, "Nothing over much," reminds us of the importance of balance and of keeping in touch with all 4 dimensions of life. Some people spend countless hours building the perfect body, but neglect their minds. Others have minds that can bench press 400 pounds, but they let their bodies waste away or forget about having a social life. To perform at your peak, you need to strive for balance in all 4 areas. Why is balance so important? It's because how you do in one dimension of life will affect the other 3. Think about it. If one of your car's tires is out of balance, all 4 tires will wear unevenly, not just the 1. It's hard to be friendly, your heart, when you're exhausted, your body. It also works the other way. When you're feeling motivated and in tune with yourself, soul, it's easier to focus on your studies, your mind, and to be more friendly, heart. During my school years, I remember studying many of the great artists, authors, and musicians like Mozart, Van Gogh, Beethoven, and Hemingway. So many of them seem to be emotionally messed up. Why? Your guess is as good as mine, but I think it was because they were out of balance. It seems they focused so hard on just one thing, like their music or their art, that they neglected the other dimensions of life and lost their bearings. As the saying goes, balance and moderation in all things. Take time for a timeout. Just like a car, you too need regular tune-ups and oil changes. You need time out to rejuvenate the best thing you've got going for yourself, you. You need time to relax and unstring your bow. Time to treat yourself to a little tender loving care. This is what sharpening the saw is all about. Up ahead, we'll take a look at each dimension, the body, mind, heart, and soul, and talk about specific ways to get that saw of yours razor sharp. So, let's get going. Caring for your body. I hated junior high. I felt awkward. I was unsure about who I was and how I fit in, and my body started undergoing all sorts of weird changes. I remember my first day in gym class. I had bought my first jock ever, but I had no idea how to put it on. All of us boys were so embarrassed at seeing each other naked for the first time in the showers that we just stood around in the showers and giggled. During your teenage years, your voice will change, your hormones will run rampant, and curves and muscles will begin springing up all over. Welcome to your new body. Actually, this ever-changing body of yours is really quite a marvelous machine. Now, you can handle it with care, or you can abuse it. You can control it, or you can let it control you. In short, your body is a tool, and if you take good care of it, it will serve you well. Here is a list of 10 ways teens can keep their physical selves sharp. Eat good food. Relax in the bathtub. Bike. Lift weights. Get sufficient sleep. Practice yoga. Play sports. Take walks. Stretch out. Or do an aerobics workout. The four key ingredients to a healthy body are good sleeping habits, physical relaxation, good nutrition, and proper exercise. I'll focus here on nutrition and exercise. You are what you eat. There's much truth to the expression, you are what you eat. I'm not an expert in nutrition now, but I have found two rules of thumb to keep in mind. First rule of thumb, listen to your body. Pay careful attention to how different foods make you feel, and from that develop your own handfuls of do's and don'ts. Everyone responds differently to food. For example, whenever I eat a big meal right before bed, I feel horrible in the morning. And whenever I eat too many French fries, nachos, or pizza, I get a grease rush. Have you ever had one of those? These are my don'ts. On the other hand, I've learned that eating lots of fruits and vegetables and drinking tons of water makes me feel sharp. These are my do's. Second rule of thumb, be moderate and avoid extremes. For many of us, me included, it's easier to be extreme than to be moderate. And so we find ourselves jumping back and forth between eating a rabbit food or a junk food diet. But extreme eating habits can be unhealthy. A little junk food on occasion isn't going to hurt you. I mean, what would life be like without an occasional Slurpee? Just don't make it your everyday fare. The USDA food pyramid is a balanced and moderate approach to nutrition that I highly recommend. It encourages eating more whole grains, fruits, and vegetables, and low-fat dairy products, and eating less food, like fast food, junk food, and snacks, which are often loaded with fat, sugar, salt, and other gook. Remember, food affects mood, so eat with care. Use it or lose it. One of my favorite movies is Forrest Gump. It's the story of a naive young man from Alabama with a good heart who keeps stumbling into success in spite of himself. At one point in the movie, Forrest is frustrated and confused about his life. So what does he do? He starts to run and keeps on running. After running back and forth from one coast to the other 2.5 times, Forrest feels better and is finally able to sort his life out. We all feel depressed, confused, or apathetic at times. And it's at times like these when perhaps the best thing we can do for ourselves is to do what Forrest did, exercise ourselves better. Besides being good for your heart and lungs, exercise has an amazing way of giving you a shot of energy, melting stress away, and clearing your mind. There's no single best way to exercise. Many teens like to play competitive sports. Others like to run or walk, bike, do inline skating, dance, stretch, do aerobics, or lift weights. Still others just like to get outside and move around. For best results, you should exercise for 20 to 30 minutes a session, at least 3 times a week. Don't let pain be the first thing that comes into your mind when you hear the word exercise. Instead, find something you enjoy doing so that it's easy to maintain. It's all about how you feel, not how you look. Be careful. In your quest for a better physique, make sure you don't get too obsessed with your appearance. As you've probably noticed, our society is hung up on looks. To prove my point, just walk into any grocery store and glance at the perfect people who adorn the covers of nearly every magazine. It kind of makes you feel self-conscious about all your physical imperfections, doesn't it? As a young boy, I was very self-conscious about my fat cheeks. My dad told me that when I was born, my cheeks were so fat that the doctors didn't know which end to spank. I clearly remember a neighbor girl making fun of my cheeks one time. My brother David heroically tried to defend me by saying they were made out of muscle. It backfired, and muscle cheeks became my least favorite nickname of all. In 8th grade, my dad sent me on a long survival trek, a nice way of saying we hiked forever and starved to try to toughen me up. The unexpected byproduct was that I lost my cheeks. But as my teenage years unfolded, I became self-conscious about many other things, such as not having a perfect smile like some of my friends did, or those zits that kept resurfacing like a bad habit that won't go away. Before you start comparing yourself to the babes and hunks on the covers of Cosmopolitan and Muscle and Fitness and begin hating everything about your body and looks, please remember that there are thousands of healthy and happy teens who don't have high cheekbones, rock-hard abs, or buns of steel. There are many successful singers, talk show hosts, dancers, athletes, actors, and actresses who have all kinds of physical imperfections. You don't have to pop steroids or get your chest enlarged to be happy. If you don't have the look or body type our society has stamped ideal, so what? What's popular today will probably change tomorrow anyhow. The important thing is feeling good physically, and not so much your appearance. Talk show host Oprah Winfrey said it best. You have to change your perception. It's not about weight. It's caring for yourself on a daily basis. Real life or art? Besides, if you don't already know it, what you see on the covers of magazines isn't real. They're images. Many years ago, actress and beauty queen Michelle Pfeiffer was featured on the front of Esquire magazine with the caption, "What Michelle Pfeiffer needs is absolutely nothing." She actually needed more help than meets the eye, as author Alan Litchfield revealed in Sharing the Light in the Wilderness. Here's what Alan said. But another magazine, Harper's, offered proof in its edition the following month that even the beautiful people need a little help. Harper's had obtained the photo retoucher's bill for Pfeiffer's picture on the Esquire cover. The retouchers charged $1,525 to render the following services: clean up the complexion, soften smile line, trim chin, soften line under earlobe, add hair, add forehead to create better line, and soften neck muscles. The editor of Harper's printed the story because we are, he said, constantly faced with perfection in magazines. This is to remind the reader there's a difference between real life and art. This is why you shouldn't be comparing your yearbook or driver's license photographs with the magazine cover faces. The photographer who is shooting your picture is getting paid minimum wage, is bored, is in a hurry, and may even hate you. Little wonder your picture comes out looking awful. Remember, our fetish with chiseled bodies hasn't always been the trend. Wouldn't it be nice to have lived in 18th century Europe, when being overweight was the in thing? Or during the Dark Ages, when everyone wore baggy robes and no one really knew what your body looked like?